Hey everybody, before we get started, I wanted to let you know about something really exciting that's coming up for the next few episodes of This Whole Life. We are going to be doing a podcast book study together with you on a little book called The Love That Keeps Us Sane by Father Mark Foley. Father Foley is a Discalced Carmelite, and he wrote this amazing book about St. Teresa's spirituality as a means to sanity. So what does she have to say to us? What does she have to teach us about the ways to be in relationship with others, how to respond to my own shortcomings and my sins, how to know when to stretch myself in the different areas of my life, and how do I know when I need to rest and say no to things? So here's how it's going to work. We are going to have an intro episode with Father Foley that's going to release on Sunday, April 28th of 2024. And then the next two episodes in the month of May will be with Father Nathan, myself, and Kenna about The Love That Keeps Us Sane. The first episode will cover the first half of the book. The second episode will cover the rest of it. And rest assured, if you're stressed out about adding a book to your life, believe me when I say it's a short, little, accessible, beautiful book. So read along with us, listen to the conversation. We'll have reflection questions included in the show notes of each episode, and we can't wait to go through this journey with you. Join us, friends. And now, enjoy this great conversation with Kenna and Dr. Lindsay Day.
We see you. We want to help you. It's very important. We do not want mothers to be struggling. So we are here for you. And I promise you, if you tell your doctor this, you are not the only person that ever said that. Okay. This happens all day long. We see women all day long with these issues. And we really are just here to help. Nobody is going to think you're crazy. We want to help you so that you can be the best mom.
Welcome to This Whole Life, a podcast for all of us seeking sanity and sanctity, and a place to find joy and meaning through the integration of faith and mental health. I'm Kenna Millay, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm happy to bring you this podcast along with my husband, Pat Millay, a Catholic speaker, musician, and leader. We invite you to our kitchen table. Okay, not literally, but you're definitely invited into the conversations that we seem to keep having once the kids have scattered off to play and we're left doing the dishes. We're excited to share this podcast for educational purposes. It's not intended as therapy or as a substitute for mental health care. So let's get talking about this whole life. I'm not gonna stand here when my friends. Welcome back to This Whole Life. Thank you, friends, for joining us. It's wonderful to be kicking off another episode with you and with my esteemed guest of the day, Dr. Lindsay Day, obstetrician and gynecologist, joining us from Iowa. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. Well, between your busy practice and family life with six kids and a husband, it's nothing short of a miracle that you were able to find this time to have this conversation. So thank you in advance for what you're offering us today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was telling Lindsay before we jumped on here that we are trying something new today, listeners, and that is we are going to try, can this whole life accomplish the one take episode? So what this is going to mean is a lot of forgiveness, maybe on your guys' part, to roll with our flubs and our blunders and our misspeaking. But hopefully we're just witnessing like real life and the reality of being human. And a little more gentleness and mercy toward ourselves. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. So thanks for being my guinea pig, Lindsay.
Sure.
So Lindsay, we often start off our episodes just sharing a high and hard from life lately. And since you are the guest in the hot seat, I'm wondering if you'd be up for going first.
Absolutely. So, like Kenna said, we have six kids, and with the addition of our most recent baby, he's 6 months old now, we decided we needed to do a little home renovation because we needed some additional bedrooms and a little bit more space. So we've been in the middle of this since January, and it's getting a little long, but this is both my high and my hard. So my high is we're almost done. So this construction, we are moving in this weekend. It's going to be so great and it's beautiful. And the hard is we're moving in this weekend. Yeah. A million things everywhere. And as you can imagine with six kids, I mean, I'm talking like things are shoved in nooks and crannies and nobody can find a single thing. And the house is a total disaster.
So you guys have been living in it while this renovation. Oh my gosh. Were you like missing your kitchen during this time?
No, thank God. It's just the basement. So it's just the basement. The kitchen is fine. But, you know, it's space. And I think you don't really realize how much, like I did not realize how much we played in the basement and toys and stuff are all down there until now. We haven't had it. And everyone is hanging out in the, basically now in the kitchen, everything. I mean, games, books, puzzles, trucks, all the school stuff, all the normal life stuff. So it's just, everyone needs just a little bit more.
No, absolutely. We say that we have zones in our house, like the top floor, our second floor is the sleeping zone, sleeping and bathing. Like that happens up there. So if you don't have clothes on, you belong upstairs looking for a pair of pants, probably. The middle zone is like the living zone. So that's where homework and cooking happens. Quiet conversations happen on the main floor. And then play and being loud is in the basement. And so I can't imagine, like you said, in the kitchen, I'm imagining like a high schooler trying to do homework, a baby, you know, screaming for his dinner, and then a toddler vrumming his race cars.
Yes.
All in one space.
We also have a dog and four cats, which is a ridiculous number of cats.
I think it depends on who you ask. If you ask my oldest daughter, she'd say that's just the right amount.
Yes, that's what my kids say too. So yeah, it's just a lot of living things in this less big space, but you know, so the high is, it's beautiful. We're so excited and the people have done an amazing job. It's going to be really great for our family. So
awesome.
Mostly a high, a little bit of a hard.
Oh my goodness. And are you going to be able to take time off to move or is it really all just going to happen this weekend?
Mostly it's all just going to happen this weekend.
I maybe shouldn't have asked that. Maybe you're like, well, Kenna, now that you've planted the seed.
If I want my husband to just like take the kids away for some time of the day so I can just do it myself, or if I want help, I'm not really sure yet what is going to be better for us.
Yeah, maybe a little mixed bag, like little column A, column B. Like,
yeah,
when you just can't handle it, take them to the playground.
You just need to go.
Well, I pray you have great weather this weekend because you know the outdoors can feel like an extension of our homes.
Absolutely.
And congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you. And, it is.
Yeah. I hope it just really alleviates the needs of your family right now.
Thank you.
I'll start with my hard. It is a really busy time for Pat and I at work and for us as a family. I had a conversation with our oldest four on the way to school the other day, and I just wanted not to rub it in their noses, like, this is how hard mommy and daddy are working. But I just told Pat, like, this is an opportunity for them to understand real life, right? Like, on a normal day, the Malays have no margin. We talk about it as like margin, like no margin. Like you don't need someone to get sick. A lunchbox, really, you just really don't want that to be forgotten. Like, you know, you don't want to run out of gas. Like there's just no wiggle room. Everything needs to go as planned. And so then when you add in extra things like Pat and I have a business work trip, all three of our girls' birthdays are being celebrated on Saturday, our three little girls, because they're born within 4 days of each other. So all of their birthdays are on Saturday. We have a son receiving First Communion, grandparents coming to town, you know, just all these things going on, some changes happening at work that's taking a lot of Pat's time. And so I just said to them, hey, this is not mommy and daddy saying that we have permission to be like grizzly bears and just difficult to live with, but I'm asking you in advance, just a little more charity, a little more gentleness, a little more, sure, mom, I can do that, a little more proactive, preemptive checking in with me. So just, but the hard of like, I don't know, as a mom, I often see my job as like smoothing the path for my kids. Mm-hmm. And so this new approach of like welcoming them into the bumpiness of it and being like, actually, we call ourselves Team Malay. So I'm like, Team Malay just like needs you guys to show up more than ever before. You are first string this week. I don't know. It's a little bit of a tension in me as a mom who like generally tries to pave a smooth path for my kids. And I'm like, no, like I'm going to share the reality of what it means to be a mom, to work, to be a wife, to take care of a house. So that's new territory. And I have a lot of conflicted feelings about it.
It's really so great when you see the older ones show up, like they get it. It's like, you know, this things are clicking and the when the big one helps the little one, when someone's like, hey, mom, I got that.
Yes.
Yeah, thank God.
And the truth is, like, our little kids love being helped by the bigger ones. Like, there are times that they prefer it. I mean, they're so much more fun than me. So it makes sense. But yeah, it is that it also makes big family life feel more manageable when you see that, like, across the ages help. So that's my hard lately. I would say the high. So we are in the Easter season, you know, Lindsay, and, for me, Easter has often had this tinge of sadness for me because Lent is so full of structure and it's such a time of growth because we've got extra prayer and extra fasting and extra small groups. And, you know, I have my accountability gal pals and just like there's so much extra that happens in the spiritual life and in my human formation. Mm-hmm. And then Easter comes and we just like eat chocolate and like watch movies and it's lovely for a time. But I'm like, I feel like I'm like floating with like no tether. And so this year in the middle of Lent, I was like, I'm going to be thoughtful about this. And I reached out to two of the women I lived with in grad school and said, what do you think of an Easter Bible study? Like, we're all, our dance card is full during Lent. Like, we don't need one more commitment in Lent. But Easter, like when a lot of these things end, these commitments conceivably end, what do you think? And so we're studying the Gospel of Mark, you know, as we're in the year B of the liturgical cycle. And it's such a source of life. And it's fun to reconnect with these friends of mine from almost 20 years ago. But also just to do something different in Easter. And as one of my colleagues said, you know, Easter is really just the beginning. We still have the Ascension and Pentecost. And yeah, that just rang true for me. And so I feel like I'm just one step closer this year to like really understanding what my heart longs for in Easter. So that has been a definite high. Yeah.
Great.
And everything is better for me when I do it in community. I'm such an extrovert, like doing a Bible study with friends. I'm like, yeah, that'll motivate me. A little accountability to get the reading done.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
Well, Lindsay, I want to just take a moment to share who you are with our listeners today. So Lindsay, I have come to know you from Pat's hometown. You and Pat grew up side by side there in Iowa, and you went on to attend St. Ambrose University in Davenport and then University of Iowa for med school and did your residency at Loyola in Chicago in obstetrics and gynecology. And as I've referenced, you and your husband live with your six kids in Iowa. Just to give readers a little bit of context for who you are. But I wonder if you want to tell us a bit about family life for you and also about work life and what kind of a practice you run and what that means day to day.
Sure. So I am back in my hometown, Davenport, Iowa. I grew up here, and my husband is also from here. We went to Assumption, which is a Catholic school here in town, and we're just so happy to be back. We have six kids. The youngest is 6 months. The oldest is 19. So we have basically every age kid, which is so much fun and so crazy and chaotic, but just such a gift. And really such a blessing to be able to experience kind of all of these things. And also kind of in a prolonged time, right? Like I don't have just babies and then no babies. Like I get all of the ages and they get to space out and I get to still experience all of it throughout. I am an OBGYN, like you said. I work at the group in Davenport, Iowa, and we are a private practice. We're really busy. We deliver, I don't know, somewhere around 1,500 deliveries a year.
Oh my gosh.
Which is kind of a lot for private practice. We're like middle size. We're not an academic institution. So we're just a group of people just taking care of ladies here in our town. And we're so fortunate. I love what I do. I truly know that my job is a calling from God, and it is a gift from God to be able to do it. To take care of women through every phase of their life is such a gift. And so, yeah, I see kind of every age woman. I see little girls. I see all the way up to like 100-year-old ladies, everything in between. I love my gynecology part of my practice, helping women through these different phases of their lives. But I also really love pregnancy and birth and postpartum. I love mothers. I love, obviously, I love women. I love taking care of women. I think it is just the most amazing thing to get to walk with someone through their journey of motherhood when they're pregnant with their first baby and they're unsure and they don't really know what's going to happen, but they're so excited, you know, and then they have this baby, and then walking with them as their motherhood journey continues to maybe they're having their second or their third baby. And now they're confident and they know what, you know, they have different questions, but they're still just as excited for this new person to join their family. It is such a gift to see families grow. So, my family, like I said, we have six kids. We're busy. My work-life balance is a little bit, you know, crazy and chaotic, where I'm on call, I'm at the hospital, I'm doing surgery, I'm in the office, and then, you know, I'm home with the kids. We're just running all around all the time, and it's really fun. And sometimes we are getting it right, and sometimes, like you said, there's no margin, and we just really need everybody to show up. And you know, some days seasons, you know, it's a season. We're sometimes in a good season and sometimes we're in a tight season, and but all of it's really good.
Yeah. I think about the sports, a metaphor using sports, like, you know, Pat will say to me, oh, that team isn't doing so well. They're in a rebuilding season. Like, I think about that, like when we're trying to regroup or readjust, like we're in a rebuilding season. So yeah. I'm just going to need everyone else to drive the carpools. Like, I'm just like, you know, like, please don't expect much from the Malays right now. We're rebuilding, trying to get a handle on things. As you were talking, Lindsay, and you were talking about the love you have for their patients, I was thinking about the OB that has delivered most of our kids and saw me through my first four pregnancies with our oldest four. And then my fifth pregnancy was our identical twins. And because she's actually family practice and doesn't perform surgeries, she said, I need to refer you out to an OB-GYN in the high likelihood, you know, that this would end in a C-section. And so referred me to another doc within the clinic. And I just remember that phone call with her and crying to her that she wasn't going to be my doctor. And I said to her, you, in my eyes, you have a cape on under your scrubs. And when you come in, like, it's just, you are a source of comfort and assurance. And so when you said about, like, they're so more, you know, they're more confident when they have their second and third baby, like, I just think of, like, there's so many people in my world, in my village, who I borrow, you know, their confidence. Like, I really, I lean on them. And that's part of what helps me feel like I can get through it. It's not because I think I'm going to do it myself, but it's because I'm like, you got my back, like, you got me. And so I just think about how much you must be that to so many women. Yeah, but I remember her being like, but is that doctor going to know, you know, XYZ thing about me when I'm in, like, you know me so well. So yes, yes. And then I went on to have another one and she got to deliver that one. So she was
okay.
Yeah. She's like, we could have visited. You didn't have to go through all this to, you know, have me back here, but no, it's great. So today, you know, Lindsay, when you and I had kind of a preliminary chat, we identified like 15 things that we could talk about. It just in general, Pat and I were like, we just want Lindsay Day on the podcast. Like, she could talk about, you know, how she takes her coffee. I don't really care. But we just knew that your sense of call, as you've talked about, and this role that you have as a mom, as a wife, and in your community as a leader in the medical field, like that was just something we wanted to share with listeners. But we landed on talking about postpartum and postpartum mood disorders and experiences of moms. And I'm actually going to maybe throw a curveball at you, Lindsay, but also dads. This is a new thing that I'm understanding, are the changes that men go through. And so maybe you can speak to that more, maybe anecdotally or you know, things you've heard from patients or what have you about their partners, but that's what we're honing in on today. And maybe I could start with this question or this impression that I have, we'll say it that way, this impression that I have that there's a lot of stigma and a lot of shame associated with women having a baby and experiencing maybe anxiety, depression, obsessions and compulsions, maybe psychosis even in some severe cases. But if we could just start there, and if you could just share your own perspective on why you think that is, and then we can maybe get into some of the finer details of the diagnosis and what have you.
Sure, absolutely. So I think, well, first of all, like you said, there is a lot of stigma. And I think part of it, I mean, this could be a whole other podcast, but there's a whole lot of expectation. I should be this. I should be that. I should do this. And I think a lot of it comes from social media. You know, moms are being fed this perception, like I should be having this perfectly clean house and I should have this perfect baby who never cries. And I should look like $1 million and have my everything together and be making homemade meals for my family and doing all these things. This is not reality. We know this. We've been there, but you know, new moms, maybe they haven't had a baby before. Maybe they don't have a whole lot of support. There's like so many different circumstances and situations that people are living in and bringing babies into the world in, that are not that picture perfect thing that you see on Instagram. And I think that causes a whole lot of internalization, a lot of shame, like you talked about, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety. And then I think too, even without the social media part, just people seeing their friends, people seeing all this stuff, people don't talk about their struggle. They don't talk about, gosh, you know what? I'm not okay. And so other people don't know that. I see this in so many different parts of motherhood, so many different parts of new mom, breastfeeding, you know, even labor, these types of things. People don't talk about, gosh, you know what? This is not an easy thing to do. And if you don't talk about it, then you think if you're the one that's struggling, you're the only one that ever struggled. You're the only one that ever had a hard time feeding your baby. You're the only one that ever felt like nervous about, am I doing the right thing? Am I okay? Is my baby okay? And if people don't talk about it, then you don't know. And so I think there is, like you said, a whole lot of stigma, a whole lot of missed communication that could happen, or more education, knowledge, you know, sharing of experiences that could help make this better for a lot of people.
Well, and something you said struck me, number one, that there's also like, I don't know, maybe the shame around admitting that it isn't as you expected it to be, you know, that like it isn't all rainbows and bunnies and just you smelling your sweet little baby and that it's just all wonderful. Like, so I think even that, like, I think there were moments in motherhood, and it wasn't just with my first child, it was with subsequent babies too, that like there was this like reconciling myself with reality, as you said, and being like, is it okay for me to admit that this isn't like totally fulfilling me and completing all of my dreams and fantasies of what it means to be woman and what it means to be wife? And, you know, so I don't know if you've had experiences like that or have talked to patients about that.
Oh, absolutely. And then also the thought that, or the knowledge, I guess, that this is fleeting and this is fast. And so you're worried, like, this is hard right now and I'm really struggling. And also my babies are growing up really fast and then I'm going to miss this and I'm missing this time right now. And then they're going to be gone and then I'm going to wish they were babies, but I didn't enjoy this phase. And if I don't enjoy it enough, then it's going to be gone and I'm going to miss this thing. And it's just this whole cycle of worry, you know? Mm-hmm. And I do think that maybe too, as when you have other kids, then you realize, well, one, you realize, okay, this is going to be okay. Like, I know this hard time isn't going to last forever, which is a beautiful perspective to have. And I think that's a gift of having multiple kids. Like, you realize, okay, this is a season. This is a hard season. It's a rebuilding season. We're going to get to the other side of it. So that's a beautiful perspective, but then also comes with that perspective of, oh boy, this is so fast. And I do know, like, gosh, I don't even remember when that kid did that thing because I was so distracted by these other things, I didn't even notice. And so then there's the worry of, I'm going to miss it. Mm-hmm. a lot of worries in a mom's life,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, the like in almost instantaneous responsibility that multiplies when you give birth to a child or when you bring home a baby that you've adopted or a child that you've adopted, like suddenly it's not just your soul, you know, right? Like you've got your spouse, you've got your partner, but they're a grown up, like they can fend for themselves, right? Like if hungry, you know how to make a peanut butter jelly sandwich, but to feel just so incredibly responsible for this very dependent being that you love more than you ever thought you could love another, that is heavy. It's weighty.
Yeah. I tell people all the time that, you know, when they come in, we always talk about mood, always talking about mood. And I always tell people, you know, it is normal to have some degree of mood changes after this big life event. In the mental health world, there's like big life events and life stressors, and you can get scores for all of these types of things. But, having a baby is a big life event. It changes everything about your life. It changes your relationship, you know, for the good and for the hard, right? Like it's a change. It changes your view of yourself, your view of your partner, the structure of your day, the structure of your sleep, the structure of your eating, your responsibilities, like you said, just workload at the home, like all of these things change. So we say 50 to 75% of people have some degree of some mood changes. Now, not all of it is postpartum depression or psychosis, of course, but some degree of mood changes after they have a baby. And that's normal. And I always say, I'm shocked that it's not 100%, because you're not eating, you're not sleeping, you're solely responsible for keeping this human being alive. Of course, there's going to be some degree of mood changes and accommodations that need to happen in this time period.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciated that you brought up, you know, the presence of social media and the internet in our lives and what a source of angst that can become. I also think it's this double-edged sword, because the internet can be a great place to get answers to quick questions, yeah, and to
support,
get information. Yeah. And support. And I do remember my doc, you know, often I'd come in with these questions and she'd go, "Sounds like you've been Googling again." Like, you know, just like she could just see right through me, and she'd be like, "Get off the Google." Like, you know, just like, "You're good. You're good." And so, yeah, it's this tricky thing of like, how awesome that we have more resources, more data than for someone to read something like 50 to 75% of women experience a mood change on the internet could really be permission giving to her of, okay, I'm going to mention this to my doc at my, you know, two-week checkup, or I'm going to, you know, call a friend or mention this to my mom or whatever. Like, so on the one hand, such a positive, and we all know we can enumerate the ways that it also can be another voice in our head, that maybe holds a shaming, shooting kind of tone to it. Well, I wonder then, you know, you brought up that statistic, 50 to 75% of postpartum moms experience some kind of mood change. Can we talk about, what does constitute a concerning postpartum mood change? What's the distinction here?
Certainly. So, you know, some of that is normal, like we talked about. Things that would be something that we would really need some extra eyes, some extra thought about, some extra attention to, and this happens about 15 to 20% of the time, that people actually get depression. Postpartum depression, it can even start during pregnancy, where things are just becoming heavier than not heavy. So that's kind of how I always gauge it. Do you have more bad days than good days? Are you feeling more worried more of the time or less of the time? Like, obviously some degree of concern about your baby's health and safety is normal. You're a mom. You have to be worried about those things. But is this consuming every waking hour? Do you have intrusive thoughts? Things that are bothersome to you, you know, it's negatively affecting you. You can't get out of bed in the morning. You don't have any joy. You're having a hard time eating. You're having a hard time focusing. Things like this, where it's actually negatively affecting your life, those would be things that really need addressing and we can help with. And I think that's the most important thing to know, because a lot of people feel maybe really isolated. They're on this island. I feel really bad and there's nothing anybody can do to help me. That's not true. There's lots and lots of things to be done. It's very important to shine some light there, because we see you, we want to help you. It's very important. We do not want mothers to be struggling. So we are here for you. And I promise you, if you tell your doctor this, you are not the only person that ever said that. Okay. This happens all day long. We see women all day long with these issues, and we really are just here to help. Nobody is going to think you're crazy. Nobody is going to take your baby away. I think people worry about these types of things too. We want to help you so that you can be the best mom.
I mean, I think that is worth underscoring, that, you know, medical professionals, mental health professionals know that the best thing is for baby to stay with mom. And so what we want to do is help stabilize mom, dad, the system, so that you all can be a flourishing family together. But sometimes we just need supports. Sometimes we just need extra bolsters to get to that place. So you kind of described postpartum depression, Lindsay. Are there different features in postpartum anxiety that you're looking for?
Yes, it's really interesting. And I think there's more, you know, in medicine and healthcare, there's always more work to be done, right? Like there's always something to be learned. And I think we probably only know a very small portion of the information to be known. And so we've always got to be looking, we've always got to be searching, but I do think we're seeing more now. Postpartum depression often has an anxiety component to it. It's not necessarily the depression you think of where you're having a hard time getting out of bed, you're having a hard time being motivated. That certainly does exist. And there is a component of that in the postpartum time period. But more often than not, I have moms come to me and they say, I'm just so anxious. I'm so worried. I'm having thoughts about things that could harm my baby. And not the, mom isn't necessarily thinking about harming her baby, but I had this beautiful patient who I learned a lot from and I'm still learning from, who came and saw me one day. And she said, I came to see you because my sister-in-law told me that I needed to come see you. She said, I wasn't really thinking I was having a problem. I was just really worried about my baby. And I was really worried. I put my baby down to do tummy time on the floor and I had to walk over here. And I had a thought that, what if somehow I fall and the coffee table flips over and lands on the baby and the baby gets hurt? And she said, my sister-in-law told me that that was a really outrageous thought to have. And the patient wasn't really thinking that was outrageous. She was really thinking like that, gosh, that horrible thing could happen. And so she came to talk to me, had some really good conversations. And actually that made me really think about some of my own experiences, because I have had similar thoughts sometimes, you know, like, gosh, what would happen if I, you know, turned around and something, you know, if you're cooking and you have boiling water, and even though the baby's maybe all the way on the other side of the room, and oh my gosh, what would happen if I accidentally slipped in the boiling water, you know, fell on the baby? These things happen in theory, maybe more often than they happen in real life. But these thoughts that people have about anxiety or worries about things that could happen to their child, I think there's some foundation of that that is a normal motherhood instinct, right? We're trying to keep our babies safe. But postpartum anxiety can kind of take over. And if it's all you're thinking about, or you're having these anxiety thoughts, worrying, you can't sleep, you're worrying about your baby's safety. These are things that we need to address. These are things that we need to look at, because that is obviously going to really negatively affect your life and your day. If you're constantly worried about those things, you're never going to be able to relax.
So when you say, you know, for the 15 to 20% perhaps where it is on that level of diagnosable, you know, mood disorder, when you say we can help, are you thinking medication? Are you thinking education? Like, what kinds of ways do you see intervention?
So, you know, I think for these types of things, it really is tailored to the person. There are people who medications are absolutely the right thing to do, and medications absolutely help. There are people who really need counseling. So sometimes we just need a different perspective, or we just need a different tool to help us in those moments when maybe an intrusive thought comes in, or you're feeling anxious. How can I have a different perspective to use this feeling that I'm having to be more productive? Or how can I have a tool to help me maybe focus on my breathing or something like this? Like, counseling is so good for so many reasons. And sometimes it's a combination of things. So sometimes I tell mamas like, okay, we can do medication, we can do counseling, we can do both. Sometimes adding another thing when someone's already feeling really overwhelmed. And then I say, okay, you know what you need to do? You need to go talk to somebody for an hour every week. And you just told me how stressed you were and there's zero extra minutes in any part of your life. And then
and also no money, by the way.
No money.
You're spending it all on diapers.
Support, and, nobody to babysit, you know, like, and then I'm telling you, go spend this hour doing this thing. You're like, okay, that's cool. Never going to happen. Yeah. So that's not actually that helpful. And so in that situation, you know, sometimes maybe we try medication and then they just come to see me every so often. We talk about things, but then there's support groups. And this is one place that the internet can come into play. Because maybe a lot of communities don't have a whole lot of support groups, but you can always find a support group on the internet. And a lot of these support groups are meeting virtually or even just like a website that has a collection of people where you can post. And then there's other moms that say, gosh, you know what? I felt the same way. I had the same thing happen to me. There is a lot of power in being seen and then also being included in a group of people that have also had the same experience. I read this article once, and it was a story about someone who was struggling with, in this particular story, they were struggling with grief. And it was like they were in this pit. And they're down at this bottom of this pit and there's like no way out. And so then somebody would come to the top of the pit, like, hey, how you doing down there? You want to talk about it? And the person's like, well, I know I really would just like want to get out of the pit. And then the person left. And then this other person came by and was like throwing stuff down, like, hey, here's some like resources for you, like when you're like down in the pit. But the person's like, hey, I just would prefer to like get out of the pit. I don't really want to like stay here. And then somebody else came along and jumped into the pit with the person. And the person was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you, now we're both stuck in this pit. And the person's like, no, I've been here before. I know the way out. I'm going to sit with you here until you're ready to get out. And then I'm going to show you the way. And I think that's a really beautiful metaphor for thinking about postpartum depression. When we have somebody that's been there before, I can sit with you in it. And then when you're ready, I can show you the way out. And that is where support groups, community, friends, family, wherever you find your support, that's where it comes in. And I think a faith community is a great, you know, opportunity for that as well, to shine some light in these areas and just walk with women in their struggle.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking of my, of my doc, and it must've been after our fourth, cause my doctor also has four children, and she just said to me like, Kenna, it might be a Chinette season. And I was like, what? And she's like, paper plates, girl, like this might be a time to live off of paper plates. And it felt so relieving, right? Paper plates maybe weren't the answer for me specifically, but to have someone like you said, be validating, and acknowledge, like, I get where you're at and there's nothing wrong with you. This isn't your fault. It's not because you're not doing something as well as you should have been. And so I have often said to friends, like, is it a Chinette season? You know, and then I just share with them this story of like, I just am trying to be someone who's giving you the permission to consider what is it that's going to make life just 5% more manageable or, you know, right now. I thought honestly you were going with the pit metaphor. I talk about the pit with medication, and the way that I'll talk about it is, you know, so if what I'm experiencing, let's say the postpartum depression, if what I'm experiencing feels like I'm down in a pit and then I'm going to go to therapy and they want me to have these tools and try these things and use these skills, but I need to be at ground level to use them, that medication can be that thing that lifts me up to ground level and actually lets me engage the skills and the tools. Cause a lot of people understandably are like, I don't want to be a zombie or I don't want to be not myself. And I'm like, no, that's not the idea. The idea is actually that you can engage the things that are you, that are authentically you. This lack of life, this lack of energy, this immense worry, like I don't actually believe that is, you know, the full you. So anyway, pit can be used in a lot of ways, but
And one thing you were just saying about the concern about how medication would make you feel. Yeah. A lot of women obviously are nursing. And so they're breastfeeding. They're worried about how's the medication going to affect my baby. Same thing during pregnancy. Sometimes, like I talked about before, some women start to actually feel depression during their pregnancy. And then they get concerned because they don't want to expose their baby to a medication. There are many, many, many safe medications we can use in both pregnancy and in the postpartum time period for anxiety and depression. So you do not have to gut this one out. This isn't something that you have to wait till you're done breastfeeding or stop your breastfeeding journey just to get treated. Absolutely not. Like, this is something that we can manage. There was another thing I thought about when we were talking just kind of about the should-haves and that I should do this. A lot of women have struggled to get pregnant. They've struggled. Mm. They've waited for these babies. They've just been in this desert for a long time. And now this person that they've been waiting for maybe years and years is now here. And oh boy, here comes a postpartum depression, and they feel even extra bad because now they've waited for this baby for so long, and this baby is here, and I should be so happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not. And what's going on? Obviously, they're happy their baby's here. They love their baby, but they're struggling with this depression. And I see that a lot too. And I think that's a really important place to check in with people, especially when people have struggled with infertility for years and years. I always keep an extra eye on them mm-hmm. after they have their babies, because that's a whole lot of things going on.
Yeah. Well, and I just think about perhaps the pressure that they were under to conceive. And so then the buildup now of bringing that baby home. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Thanks for naming that. I'm thinking about, okay, so Lindsay, if, you know, 50 to 75% of women experience a mood shift, 15 to 20%, you know, medication therapy could really be what's needed and helpful. I'm wondering about those others where it's the shift that creates a burden, but maybe isn't to the level of, you know, needing medication, maybe isn't even to the level of needing to go to therapy weekly. What are things that you are talking to these moms about, ways that they can, maybe resources that are easily available to them that they could be reaching for that could help to, address the mood, lift the mood?
Yes. So super good. And it's very interesting. When you look at these types of shifts among different cultures and maybe around different areas of the world where maybe there's different support for women and mothers and families, there are places that are higher rates, America. There are places that have lower rates, places where, you know, there's rooming in of the mother and the baby for 30 or 60 days. There's not a whole lot of expectations to do anything else other than take care of yourself and your newborn. And so obviously we can't change our maternity leave policy in this country yet, though hopefully someday, I don't know. So what we need to do is we need to give ourselves a whole lot of grace. So we're in that, you know, we're in that place, like you said, where maybe we don't need medication and counseling, but we're still struggling. Like, this is still a hard place to be. And a whole lot of grace. You gotta take some time for yourself. Take a bath, go for a walk. I know it's silly because a lot of times it's really tied to sleep and you're not sleeping because you have this newborn baby, but take a nap. I always tell people, you got to just give yourself a grace. Okay. This is not a time for having the clean house. Like you said, it's a paper plate kind of season. This is not a time for a whole lot of advancement in your career, getting a lot of work done. This isn't I'm going to get this project done during my maternity leave kind of a thing. No. This is a time for focusing on your body healing. Your body did something amazing. And you know, there's obviously a lot of different circumstances, a lot of ways families are grown. But, you know, if you gave birth, you had a C-section, if you had a vaginal delivery, if you grew a human, this is a way your body has to heal from that too. And then keeping somebody alive is a lot of work. So you have to give yourself the resources that you need to be able to do that. So you need to eat, you need to rest. And you need to give yourself a lot of grace. Moving your body, getting outside. These are all things. Sometimes reading books. Sometimes there's, you know, something that is going to remind you that you're still a human being who has like other things. And also some perspective on life, I think, is really important. And then, of course, I think we briefly talked about relationships. So how this affects people and their partners. And you mentioned how does this affect dads? Dads have a lot of mood changes too. Their role has changed from just being a partner to now being a father, maybe being a father of multiple people. A lot of times if there are other children, then the dad is really kind of taking over for like the bigger kids and the mom's taking care of the baby. The dad sort of feels like maybe he's losing his partner. There's lots of different changes dynamically in the family that are going on. And so those need to be addressed too. But I think coming together, working together, supporting each other, I think nothing can be held against each other if it happens between, you know, midnight and 8 a.m. when you have a newborn baby for the first year, kind of don't make any big decisions. These types of things are really, you know, important.
Yes. So it's interesting you bring up the differences in cultural expectations of new moms and the rooming in that you spoke to, which is where a mom stays in her bed and her baby is with her and people come to her. I know in certain cultures, there's even certain like boundaries around who comes to see her in that, you know, at various times. There was this blog post, and if we can find it, because it's really old, maybe it was after our second babe. So this is like 11 years ago. But I read this blog post from a mom, and I think it was titled "How to Postpartum Like a Boss." And basically it was like letting go. It was like all about letting go. And there was this one litany that just cracked Pat and I up. And it was like, she was talking about mothering in, laying in her bed. I think, you know, she was advocating for 2 weeks. Like that would be the ideal if you could, you know, lay down in the bed for 2 weeks, really limit your activity, let your body heal. As you said, it forces that the house duties, the cooking duties, the laundry duties, like the mothering of the others, like is largely falling on, you know, someone else's shoulders. Primarily, we would assume your partner, your spouse, and that you really are being attentive to the baby and people can come visit you there. So there's this one litany that she writes in there, and it was something like, you know, kids are banging on the door, calling your name. Don't care. Kids are shoving Cheetos under the bedroom door because that's what they're eating for breakfast. Don't care. Husband's picked up day drinking. Don't care. Like, it was just like, I mean, I think she was being hyperbolic in her speech, but Pat would catch me, you know, when I was postpartum, he would catch me trying to overfunction, overmanage things. And he would go, Cheetos being pushed under the door because that's what they're eating for breakfast. And he'd be like, what do you say? And I'd be like, I don't care. like trying to like will myself to not care. I loved that. And I, after reading that, that is what we adopted. And it was humbling for sure.
Yeah.
But it was also so beautiful. I remember, so we had most of our babes in the house that we just moved out of, and it was on the second floor of this old farmhouse, and we didn't have much room in our master bed because it was a 1920s farmhouse. They didn't have king size beds back then. And so it was like this little sliver of space, and Pat would bring up two dining room chairs. And when friends would come to drop off a dinner or friends would come just to meet the baby or whatever, he'd go, yeah, go ahead, go on up, go see her. They'd sit. We also, admittedly, they weren't the most comfortable chairs. And I was like, that's okay, because I don't need them staying for 4 hours. Like, you know, like that's a 30-minute visit is really cool. Like, I will be so excited to see you in like 3 months. Give me 3 months.
Yeah.
When I'm dressed and showered, and I'll hang out with you at the coffee shop. But I just like loved that. Like, yeah, let's give each other this permission and really get to think about what it is that we need. And my body, just for whatever reason, it really would have a hard time healing after I gave birth. Mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of setbacks after my first, where I think I thought I was good. And then I went too hard and then I physically would have symptoms and then mentally would struggle with like, oh, why do I feel like I just gave birth yesterday? It's been 3 weeks. And so, yeah, I guess maybe a word of encouragement from me of like taking time for in that postpartum period to consider like what would be helpful for me. Maybe it's not going to be Chinette, like I said, and maybe it's not going to be rooming in. Maybe that's not possible, but you know, what is it that would just take a little bit off, give back some margin.
Well, and something you just said about maybe, okay, it's been 3 weeks, I should be like going now. I always tell women, it took your body 9 months to get to be like this. This didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in 3 weeks. So you have to give your body 9 months to get back to where it was before, and sometimes even longer, depending on what experiences you might have had. And so, of course, everybody, you know, wants to get back to their pre-pregnancy clothes and the pre-pregnancy body. And we have to remember, like, our bodies are amazing. How absolutely incredible that you could grow a human being and bring it into this world, and now a new person exists that did not exist before. It is so miraculous. And your body did that. And so give thanks for your body. Thank you for the way that you carried this human and kept it safe and brought it here. And now I'm going to give you some grace and just let you heal. And I am not going to run a marathon in 2 weeks from now. There are very few amount of women
probably
in the world that can do that. You're just maybe going to go for a walk around the block. And that is great. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is that patience though. I mean, I really think it ties to a sense of humility and a poverty of spirit, that there is a natural order to things and we get to participate in that. But it means that we didn't write all the rules and it doesn't maybe go at the speed, the pace that we want it to. And that's really hard. I think, especially as Americans, that in 2024, that is difficult. And so we know motherhood offers us many opportunities to learn things. But that is, I think, one of those hidden gems. And what I'll say to clients, you know, as they share this with me, is I say, this is such great training for the toddler years and the teenage years. And I assume I was a young adult once, so I can speak to this from this end of it. A young adult, you know, raising a young adult, like just this awareness of like, I don't just get to control everything. Mm-hmm. I don't get to wish it into being. There may be steps I have to take that I didn't foresee, ways that I need to ask for help, and break down those walls of shame, secrecy.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of work to do on surrender and trust.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask, just as a sidebar, you know, Lindsay, as a mom, as a woman who not only has the care of six beautiful souls in her family, but so many patients on your caseload, and, you know, things don't always go the way that you expect, even despite your best efforts as mom, as doctor, as wife, like, how do you live into that surrender? How do you, lay down your will to receive things as they are? I'm realizing I just put you on this seat of like, you're an expert.
I wish I could tell you. I'm so good at that.
What are you learning? Maybe that's a better way to put it.
I mean, I think, you know, God must laugh at me all of the time because, you know, he's probably like, Lindsay, here's another example. Here's another opportunity for you to practice what you preach. So yeah, no, he is hilarious, I think, in the ways that he provides opportunities for me to work on surrender. But no, I mean, I think for me, it's prayer. It's so much prayer. I say, Jesus, I surrender myself to you. Take care of everything. I say that novena. I just have that one on repeat. I'm just constantly praying that. It for me, I am very type A, I'm very control, order, these types of things. And so God has really worked on my heart to give a lot of this to him. And I think he's done this in many ways, but in my motherhood journey specifically, our oldest is adopted, and that came with a whole set of additional challenges that we weren't maybe expecting or prepared for. And there was no amount of control that I could do in those situations. The only thing that I could do was pray and surrender her to him. And so I got a lot of practice in that regard. And so that's where I am, I guess, you know, just like anything, there are times when I am getting it right. And there are more times than I would like to admit that I am not.
Yeah.
The good news is there's lots of opportunities for practice, right?
Yes. I mean, I'll say to Pat often, like, this is clearly our path to sainthood because
Amen.
Like, I must be getting ready. Like something, please tell me something about this is going to be effective.
Yes.
But I love that you're saying like prayer is so much, and that surrender prayer is so much of what helps you, because in my mind, I hear that as I get back in touch with reality of who God is and who I am, and that I am not God, and that he's got ideas,
thank God for that.
Plans, right? I mean, what an ordered world we would have though, Lindsay, but
that would be so wrong.
to be in touch with reality, in that way. I think of Therese, you know, who is one of our patrons here at the Martin Center, which produces this whole life, and just her statement of everything is grace. And even in the moments that I mess up, even the moments that do not go according to my very well calculated plans, thank you very much. even in those moments, like there is something that the Lord wants to offer me in this, and some kind of, you know, growth or something that he wants to uproot. It's, you know, whether I'm ready to accept it or not is a whole other question. But yeah, so thanks for sharing that. I wonder, we're just going to keep this train rolling of all of Lindsay's wisdom. If you have a challenge by choice for us, Lindsay.
I do. Okay. So it kind of goes a little bit with what you were talking about, the mothering in, the rooming in, the people coming to visit. So I think I hear this a lot of times. Let me know if you need anything. Or I'll come over and I'll hold your baby for you. Moms don't really need you to come hold their baby. Maybe they do for like a small amount of time so they can take a shower. What moms need is they need somebody to come do those things. Clean the house. Bring them a meal. Take care of their other kids. Take their kids to the park for a little bit. And no mom ever is going to be like, when someone says, oh, let me know if you need anything, they're not going to be like, oh yeah, actually, like, could you come over and do a load of laundry for me, please? No. So my challenge, my choice is don't say, let me know if you need something. So if you have a mom in your life, you probably do. There's probably someone in your life, and it could be an older mom, a younger mom, a new mom, a middle mom, any type of mother. Just do something kind for them. Don't wait for them to ask. Don't even say like, hey, if you want, I'm going to the store, I'll pick this up for you. Let me know. No, just do it. Just do it. Just grab that thing. Oh. Just drop off that meal. Just, hey, I saw your kid needed that. I, you know, I can grab them from practice today, whatever. I don't know, but don't ask.
I love it.
Just do it.
I love it. Yeah. The don't ask. And it's so true. It is human nature, isn't it? That we throw out these kind of blanket invitations and nobody takes us up on it. It also made me think, I'd forgotten about this, that when our twins were born, another family with twins set up not just a meal train, but a chore train. And oh my gosh, it was amazing. So she came down and sat with me and asked me like, what are things that would be helpful? And then she said, okay, let's go through your house. You know, I was like 6-7 months pregnant at this point. And she was like, let's go through your house and we're going to explain, you know, in a Word doc, like how this thing works. So how to work your dishwasher, how to work your washing machine, how to, you know, how you all do XYZ thing. And we wrote up the instructions and pasted them on the appliance or in the place of the house where things need to be done. One of the things I'll never forget was kind of in the spirit of your challenge by choice. A friend who's an empty nester was over doing another chore, had signed up to come just clean toilets or something, who knows. It was in the transition. Our girls were born in April, right? Because we're about to celebrate their birthdays. They were born in April. So it's that transition when you have so much snow gear, just clogging up all the doorways and the backpacks and the floors. And she just quietly took all of our winter gear, washed it at her house, and brought it back in garbage bags and just stored it in our basement and said, hey, by the way,
what an angel.
It's all just right there, right? And I was like, oh my goodness, you are such a godsend. So I'd completely forgotten that, probably because my brain was so fried at that time. But that was a time when someone did exactly what you're describing for me. I mean, on a really big level. But just did it, saw something that was needed.
You would never ask somebody to do that. There's no mother in the history that would be like, hey, can you change out the seasons of my house?
Yes. wash my kids' grubby ski pants. Whoa.
That is the biggest gift that anybody could give. That is amazing. Oh,
yeah. And just, I don't know, I think too, like how that helped chip away at any feelings mm-hmm. of shame to just this mm-hmm. implicit message of you are not less than because another mom washed your kids' winter hats and gloves. and you know, it was an implicit message, but it was strong and it mm-hmm. it strengthened my heart. So thank you for that challenge choice. I love that. I'm kind of like thinking in my head, like, okay, what mom am I going to like sneak yes. attack now with some love?
Yes. If everybody did yeah. one mom, I mean, like, look.
Yeah. Just go to Costco, grab a frozen lasagna, like, you know, yeah, whatever.
Wrap it up at somebody's house.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, let's pray, Lindsay, and wrap this up, and then we'll get ready for others to hear this conversation. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Lord God, we thank you for the ways that you let us participate in bringing life into this world. As mothers and fathers, grandmas, grandpas, as people who support new life coming forth, and the reality of how challenging that can be, Lord, thank you for letting us have this conversation to bring these things into the light and to speak about it in a way that allows healing, that allows grace and mercy to flood in and to lift us up. God, I ask you to bless all new parents, whether it's their first or their 15th baby, new parents who are in this season of change. I pray that this conversation would give them the freedom to really consider what they need and to let it come through the charity of others, through the goodness and the generosity of others, and that they would know that ultimately it's you who are the source of that grace. We ask for your blessing on each and every one of us and the souls that we take responsibility for. And we offer this all in your holy name, Lord. Amen.
Amen.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you so much, Lindsay. We look forward to having you back again and are so grateful for how you've opened your practice and your family life to us so we can benefit from your wisdom.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And thank you to our listeners for being with us for this valuable conversation. Is there someone in your life that could benefit from hearing this? Would you consider sharing this episode with them? And then maybe rate, review, subscribe, help us to get the word out about this whole life and the ways that we're seeking sanity and sanctity together. And until next time, God bless you.
This Whole Life is a production of the Martin Center for Integration. Visit us online at thiswholelifepodcast.com.
I hope I said some good things.
Oh my gosh, of course you did. No, and I really do think we got it in one take. Pat, you're welcome.